Spiegel and Holmes, afternoons on the Score.
I'm on the phone last night with Kevin Byard. He said we could feel the electric energy emanating from the tunnels at Soldier Field and just how special that felt before they, during pregame warmups, before they went out. And he gave me the quote of the week, and I'll share it with you guys. I don't know if he said it in his press conference, but he said, we have to play to the edge, but just don't jump off the cliff. Like, controlled aggression. So I'm going to use the hell out of that clip. I got goosebumps, and I, you know, play the edge, don't jump off the cliff. Controlled aggression. And he told me that, you know, we know how much this means to us as a team. We know how much it means in terms of the division, but we mostly know how much this means to the city of Chicago. So make no mistake, if you're listening and you're Bears fans, these guys know how you feel, and they want it as much as you do.
Spiegel and Holmes, afternoons on the Score.
Rooftop, like we bring in 88 back. It's the Spiegel and Holmes show. We've got you until Bulls basketball tonight.
17-19.
They had a nice little, you know, run.
I know. They got back to 500.
But this is.
I know, Lawrence.
This is what they do.
I know. A friend of mine was at their game in Boston. Said, yeah, those Bulls, they battled pretty hard for not having a star.
Oh.
I was like, that's pretty good scouting by you.
Modest had some star moments.
I know. It's what I said. Modest had star moments, and he's got possibilities. And they're like, okay. Well, Jaylen Brown didn't shoot well, and the Celtics still beat him good.
They sure did.
Yeah.
That's not fun.
That's not anything that we need to focus on right now.
From Chicago, number 14, Matisse Bouzelis.
Oh, that's close.
Oh.
That is. That I love his. Even, I love not, his paintings. I really do.
It's not even close to how it's spelled.
The guy was just at the Art Institute. Or is that in Boston? He's at the Museum of Fine Arts there in Boston.
That's
Matisse Bouzelis.
Yeah.
All right.
Magritte Giddey is the point guard on this team. Magritte and Matisse.
That's all right. And whatever.
Onward.
Let's talk about this game from an emotional calibration standpoint. Now, ordinarily.
Yes.
When we talk about this sort of thing, we are talking about the fan base. We're talking about how Bears fans happen to deal with this, how they're going to get themselves mentally and emotionally prepared for it. How difficult is it going to be for people to deal with their Packer fan in-laws or wives or husbands or...
Or neighbors. Mm-hmm.
And you know, I was...
Shout out to all you Janets out there.
I was joking on House of L about this last night, that what I find to be really interesting about how... all of this stuff has played out with a rivalry thing is that you have to remember there's a generation in between us and the people that have had their Bears awakening now that flipped. There are a bunch of Chicagoland people that were like, you know what? I think I'm going to be a Packers fan. That's why there are these pockets. Like whether we're talking about in Rockford or Elgin or in Kenosha, like there's these pockets of people because...
Isn't that what Brian Bulaga talked about?
Yes.
That his dad stopped being a Bears fan because they fired Ditka. And then it begat a whole family full of Packers fans.
Yep. And I think that story is more prevalent than one would imagine.
I think you're right.
And so that there's that part of this whole thing. So we usually talk about this from the standpoint of the fans that are involved in the rivalry. But I think that we have two examples, and like Stacy was saying with what Kevin Byard said, the Bears are still trying to find the proper emotional calibration for this game.
Help me remember this, Tanny, because you listen to everything, and I mean everything. Cole Kmet, the first time they played the Packers, said, we're not... like, we don't want to get too high. Do I have that right? If you're going to play stuff, great, but I just know that you know the storyline here in terms of the up and the down and the up and the down.
Well, yeah, this is mostly about, you know, how geared up they were for the last meeting they had,
okay.
You know, a couple weeks ago.
Because that's what I'm remembering, because going into that game, he said that they were too amped the first time. right? And then they played kind of flat in that first half because they were too amped. And so the second time, they wanted to be a little bit more level. But the truth is, they sucked in both of those first halves. That's what makes this a little confusing.
And they were not more level in that second game. And I think that, to Stacey's point, what she was talking about, the energy, I think when you get in that Soldier Field and that energy kind of takes over, you kind of lose whatever discipline you thought you had about how you wanted to play football.
Right, but sometimes like it's a narrative arc, like, oh, we played man in the first game, then we played zone, and now we got to do this. Like, oh, we were too amped, then we were unamped, now we got to be level. They sucked in both games, so it's hard to know exactly what they should do.
Yes, it's so interesting to talk to a guy like Matt Forte that kind of always had hit the right note with
man.
Like fury underneath, but he wasn't going to go outside of himself in a game and be an emotional, like, deterrent to you winning. And I think Tanny's spot on. You look at what happened at the beginning of the second game between teams.
Oh, boy.
It was like they didn't get the message. And look, you, Speeds, I think
DeMarco Jackson was, crowd surfing on the opening kickoff.
He was swag surfing.
You said you were crowd surfing at home doing laundry?
Yeah, that was after the game, though, not as the game kicked off.
But I think we all jumped on a pile. In that first 2 minutes of that game, every single one of us jumped on a pile.
So you were there.
Yeah. Yeah.
You were at the emotional amplifier of this.
Thoroughly out of control.
Walk me through what it felt like for you. And if we should give the Bears a little bit of grace, because the fans themselves, the city was on fire.
Oh, yeah, the city was on fire.
That whole day.
The whole day and the whole atmosphere there. And Jen, just everybody getting revved up like crazy. And the coaches talked about it too. But you could feel that kind of like that excitement, but violent. I keep using the word crackling. I bet people are tired of me using crackling. But that's just the way that it felt. That, like, everybody was inside the Jiffy Pop as it was getting more and more towards the top. And that thing was going to blow. And on that kickoff with DeMarco jumping on the top. And then what? Three different penalties on the Bears' first defensive possession, including one that was soft from Booker, I thought the call was. But yeah, it was definitely out of control, but nobody in the crowd was upset that the Bears were out of control. We all thought that it was the refs holding us back, that we had a right to that kind of violence, and we were entertained.
The violence part of it is something that you want. You want to see the team be ready for the moment, but not end up hurting themselves by getting penalties and extra yardage. How many penalties did they end up with? Was it over 100 yards in that game?
Giant pile.
I believe the crew that's on the game this weekend is known for penalties, I believe.
They are. I think it's more than 3.29 is the number for this crew, which only worked 11 games. Like, they've worked the fewest number of games of anybody.
Hey, congrats, Bears. You get one less day of rest, and you get an inexperienced crew.
Inexperienced crew.
Welcome to prime time.
That's flag happy. You don't like that, do you, Baby T? We'll talk about it on the next episode of our show.
That's
Baby
right.
T's back there.
Baby T's in the Bulls zone.
We already took the promo shot.
But what you want, though, is you want that Ravens-Steelers energy.
Yes.
Like, when they play,
yes,
that is controlled aggression.
That's what it felt like. Ravens-Steelers energy, or in the Kaepernick-Russell Wilson days, Legion of Boom, Fangio, San Francisco-Seattle energy. Man, that's what it felt like.
I mean, that was definitely some energy.
Yay!
10 penalties for 105 yards, by the way.
Yeah, it was a lot of, they did a lot of bad stuff in that game. And you're just like, okay, how do you, to be fair, it's a tough thing to figure out. Like, everything. That's why I asked Matt about it, because not everyone is equipped for it. People tell you what they think it is. But remember, there aren't a lot of people on this Bears team that know what it is. The Bears have been playing a lot of crap games for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And even Cole Kmet and Jalen Johnson, those guys have been playing in a lot of crap games. Games where the only thing that they're playing for is like a nebulous pride thing. Where they were playing for the division. in that game.
Right, right, right.
And now they're playing to move on in the playoffs.
Yeah, these are big deals.
And these are human beings. Mm-hmm. They are people. And so you have to figure out how to get to the right place where you aren't hurting yourself.
And Cole Kmet can speak to all of this, including his youth as a pure fan. He was on with our guys, Take the North, live right here between 6 and 8 last night. Here's Kmet on, should we start with the emotions in the playoffs, Tanny, or you want to go to that first one on the post-Packers game vibes? Let's do that. Here we are.
Ben had alluded to it last time before we played these guys, and look, there's no question that we really want to win this game, and they really want to win this game. And sometimes that's, you know, the want to win is good enough, and that works like in high school and maybe in some college games. In the NFL, everyone wants to win and wants to win these games badly. And what it comes down to is those kind of those coach speak things, but the basic fundamentals and doing the details right, communicating effectively. Those are the things that are going to win out. And so we got to go out there at the end of the day and go execute this plan to the fullest. And I think if we do that, we'll like the result that we have. I mean, I didn't sleep for like 2 days, and that's no joke. I remember being exhausted on like Tuesday or Wednesday still just from that game, just because there's so much emotion put into that. And then obviously to have the ending that we did, it just kind of adds to that as well. And going into overtime, so, and this late in the year, it was definitely a lot emotionally for sure. But, you know, it was no doubt a fun game to be part of, and a game for the first, you know, call it 57, 58 minutes that we would like to be better and like it to go differently. But, you know, look, the ball bounced our way a few times later in that game, and we were able to take advantage of it. And, you know, that was good to see us kind of close that game out the way we did. But we know that if we want to have a good result here this Saturday, we're going to have to come out much faster and you know, get to what we need to be doing earlier in the game.
So what does that look like if they come out faster and they get to what they need to be doing earlier in the game? How does that resonate?
I hope it means that they're playing a cleaner game, that they're in a space where everyone knows their assignment so that they can play faster, that we aren't seeing six mistakes in the first 11 snaps or whatever it was.
And we're also not seeing the chaos that led to all those penalties.
Uh-huh.
So you're splitting the difference.
So there's another point of view on this that we should share.
Because what Kurt Warner speaks to in this is something that I think did happen in that Saturday night game.
So Kurt Warner talked to us on Monday about the playoffs and how, because we hear it all the time from guys that played and people with microphones, it's different, it's faster, it's all of these things. I thought Kurt gave a really good explanation of what it feels like and where the advantages might be inside of this game.
Again, it's, you know, a lot of people talk about you know, the pace of things and everything, you know, being faster. And I don't know if that's possible. I mean, that would just be saying, oh, guys don't play as hard and as fast in the regular season as they, you know, they just decide to play a little bit faster, you know, in the playoffs. Like, I don't think that's the case. I think what makes it feel faster and better is, you know, the fact that you understand the stakes, you understand the ramifications of every play. And, you know, one play that costs you a regular season game is different than one play that knocks you out of the playoffs and sends you home. You know, so I think you understand that. I think the other part of it, too, is that you're playing against really good teams every week. So it's not as if, okay, we're playing against a bad team and then we're playing against an average team. And then we got a good team and then we got an average team again. You know, like everybody's good. And so every play and every game is so vital, and you just have to be a little bit better. You got to be a little bit more buttoned up, and you got to make the plays that are there, and you can't let them make, you know, the plays on the other side. And so that to me is really the biggest difference. And then the, you know, when you talk about pressure, you know, the one thing to me about, you know, playoff time and when it comes to pressure is I think there's so much to not letting one play lead into another play that leads into another play. And so, you know, in the regular season, again, you know, there's going to be another shot. There's going to be another game. There's going to be like every game doesn't mean as much when you're in those big moments and you make a mistake, you know, it's so easy to go, oh my gosh, you know, if I make another mistake, we're going to go home and we're not going to get another shot. And so you allow one play to lead into another play, to lead into another play. And that's what oftentimes can sink people. You know, I played in three Super Bowls. And, You know, my first Super Bowl, we were up 16-0, and then we were tied 16-16. In my second Super Bowl, we were down 17-3, I think, and we came back and tied it at 17-17. And then in my last Super Bowl, we were down 10 at the half, and we came back and took the lead with 2.5 minutes to go. So all that to say, there's ebbs and flows in these big games, just like every other game. But if you start to panic when something goes against you early, that's usually when the blowouts happen. That's usually when the good teams take advantage of it. So you really have to allow, you know, when we talk about the pressure, is you can't let that part of the pressure get to you, thinking, oh, shoot, that one play just cost us this playoff game. You got to ride the wave, and you got to get back in line, and you got to, you know, one snap and clear, let that play go and get to the next one, because things can change, and, you know, momentum shifts in these big games just as much as they do in any regular season game.
Man, thought that was great stuff, and I got to say, I thought the Bears let that momentum build and build and build against themselves.
It turned into anxiety.
Oh, it absolutely turned into anxiety.
And, that's okay.
I know, but in the stands, Lawrence, it turned into depression. It turned into fear that, oh my God, was our whole season a lie? Literally, like, thoughts like that popped into your head. You're like, if we can't beat Malik Willis, then what are we doing? Is this whole thing just a fluky sham?
Hey, man.
And then they pulled it out.
That's why it could happen again. Like, those feelings could resonate inside of Soldier Field again if things don't kind of click.
You think the fan base is susceptible to those kind of feelings?
Yeah,
is the team susceptible to those kind of feelings? Are we a fluky sham that's not ready to compete just yet?
I don't,
you shouldn't.
I don't think so, but they don't. Most of the players don't have the legacy of that weighing on them like fans do. Fans are thinking about things that happened 15 years ago.
Grandpa told me this was going to happen.
25 years ago. There's still people talking about Charles Martin and Jim McMahon.
You weren't there. I was.
Like, there's a lot of things that fans harbor that players have no idea about.
How many of these guys know who Chris Conte is? How many of these Bears even know who that is? We got a text yesterday. I still hate Chris Conte, to your point. Yeah. So.
And Charles Martin, I never say anything other than rest his soul. But may he rot and burn in hell. Period. New paragraph.
That's different than rest
those
his soul.
Those are divergent thoughts.
I never say. That being said, may he rot and burn in hell.
Those are totally divergent thoughts.
No, look, you're right. But it sure felt like the team didn't believe in itself, as the crowd was there not believing in the team.
And remember, in both games, they had opportunities early to get rid of that feeling. The fourth down call where they go down 10 plays, 70 yards. And C.J. Gardner-Johnson's interception on the second possession at Lambeau Field, where they got down to the 36 and got 0 points.
That was the moment. The Manungai play the moment when the anxiety in the building was like, our coach just do the thing that people were worried that he might do, get a little too cute?
Literally before that moment, it felt like all 60,000 of us were going to join together as a giant Voltron and climb over the stadium walls and march up the lakefront.
With the goalposts?
Yeah, absolutely. With the goalposts is like a little baby pitchfork in our hands because we're so gigantic. That's what it felt like at the beginning of that game. And then after the Manungai, the snap over his head on fourth down, it's like brrr, all the air came out of the damn balloon, and we all just sat there for 60 minutes.
But hey, then Caleb and the boys rose to the occasion.
They did.
And they said, all right, let's go. And let's try and make some plays.
And Romeo Doubs was fearful.
Is on tape around the entire NFL.
Put that man on the hands team again.
This is not how you field an onside kick. You don't back up.
I'm afraid.
I'm going to go for it.
I'm going to go too late. They hit me in the head.
Yeah, it wasn't good at all.
All right, so what's our lesson in terms of emotional calibration? Up, but not too up.
It's something for Bears fans to watch for in the beginning of the game.
Yeah.
That's my takeaway from this. Like, you've heard the players speak about it now. This is the third time that they've spoken about it. Let's see how they do. Let's see if they can harness the energy
right
into something super positive and not let it overwhelm them.
So do you remember who opened up for emotional calibration that night at the Elbow Room?
Who's that?
Fluky Sham. Those guys are great.
I thought it was Fluky Stokes.
No, it was Fluky Sham and Emotional Calibration back to back. It's a hell of a show.
Can I ask you a question?
Lori Lightfoot was on trumpet. True story. I saw Lori Lightfoot play trumpet. I didn't know it, but I know that she played trumpet in a band at the Elbow Room.
Really?
In the 90s. Oh, yeah.
She'll probably be at the game.
Sunday nights.
Who's doing the anthem? Because you talk about emotional amplification. Who's doing? Because are you doing the anthem?
Not that I'm aware of, but the day is young.
Does this feel like a break glass, here's Jim Cornelison type of game?
Well, who did it last time? Do you remember? Like, there's nothing wrong with if they won the last game, let's run it back.
I don't remember.
I don't remember. I remember the Leo High School vocal group.
They're great.
Phenomenal. They did halftime. And I remember thinking, man, we're just so down. We're not giving you the love that you deserve right now because we were down. I don't remember if they did the anthem or not.
Weren't they like a finalist on
every year? On whatever it is, America's Got Talent,
yeah,
something like that. They're unbelievable.
They're so good.
Yeah, I saw them at Wrigley one time as well, and happened to see them in their bus leaving Wrigley, and we were just like, you guys are great.
It was awesome. Uniting Voices, the Chicago Children's Choir,
okay,
who did it on December 20th.
Bring it back.
Who's got a bona fide winning pedigree in the playoffs? John Vincent.
Ooh, let's go.
Our guy.
Let's go.
I love that idea.
Let's go.
I really love that idea.
Oh, I'd love it if John Vincent sang the anthem. Oh, that would be that's the idea, Tanny. That's why you're great at this. Can we talk about the Packers quarterback for a little bit?
Yeah, let's please do that.
Because John spoke to some stuff that I have been feeling. He gave voice to some stuff about Jordan Love that I have been feeling. I want to work through some of this. We'll do that next on The Score.
That Love has been suddenly given some MVP consideration, and he deserves it. This is where you bring a team back on the road. This is where those things kind of take off.
Exactly. Against the top pass rush team, the top third down defense. I mean, everything right there in front of you.
Second and eight. Across the middle. Intercepted. It's Moss. Love was trying to hit Dontayvion Wicks.
I've got a ton of confidence in him, but it's not just about him. I think a lot of times, the quarterback is going to get too much credit when you win and too much blame when you lose, and that's just the nature of it. But I think that there's nobody else I'd rather have, than Jordan.
Matt LaFleur talking about Jordan Love. Spiegel and Holmes show. We are talking Bears-Packers. We are going to get a Bears hit, one word, from Chris Emma. Coming up at 5 o'clock, he is at Hallis Hall.
Can I give you a synergy item about Jordan Love and Aaron Rodgers and Brett Favre?
Sure.
Aaron Rodgers and Brett Favre both won their lone Super Bowl as Packers quarterbacks when they were 27 years old. In their sixth year in the NFL and their third year as an NFL starter. Jordan Love is 27 years old in his sixth year in the NFL and his third as an NFL starter. That is crazy, eerie synergy for something that they have done by design in drafting the replacement and letting them watch and learn. It's pretty amazing. Rob Domofsky wrote a great piece in ESPN a couple days ago about what Mike McCarthy did with Rodgers in those first 3 years and what Mike Holmgren did with Favre. They went 9-7 the first, first three seasons for Holmgren and the first two with Favre. They were 9-7. Then they had a conversation like, hey, you want to win a Super Bowl or not? And Favre's like, yeah, I do actually. Okay. Then he came back and threw 38 touchdowns and 16 interceptions.
I think Jordan Love is a really interesting amalgam of the two guys. And I know that those aren't the only two guys that I should compare him to, but considering the success the Packers have had at stabilizing the quarterback position for three decades, and I guess now we're going to a fourth with him being there as long as he's been there, I think now when I watch him play, I feel like he's a little bit more Favre than he is Aaron Rodgers. And the reason I say that is he'll do all this cool stuff, and then you'll see something where you're like, what? Why did he throw that? Like, why did he make that particular throw?
But did he stop that now? This is his best year in terms of that.
Well, he, like Kuhn said, Toyotathon. Whenever Toyotathon is going on, Jordan Love goes through a really good run where he'll throw one interception over six or seven games.
Mm-hmm.
But then there'll be the player you go, what was he seeing there? And did he just think, oh, I can make that throw? And I'm going to make that throw.
The concussion derailed the season. To that point, he had been on a heater. And he still finished in the top 10 in fewest interceptions. Touchdown percentage, passer rating, average pass completion length, touchdown to interception ratio is in top 10. 25-plus yard completions, tied for sixth in the NFL with games of 100-plus rating. Like, he still... Like, there are people that believe that he has turned the corner in terms of the swashbuckler, gunslinger, interception thing.
Yeah, it's hard because I look at him and I go, I'm waiting for that next thing. Like, it feels like he's right there when you start talking about the elite quarterbacks in the league. It feels like he's right there and everyone's waiting for him to step into the conversation with the other guys that are in that tier of quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't happen. Now, I thought that last year, the way that he played November, December last year, and then you have the playoff game against Dallas, which I feel like was a little bit more of Dallas being stupid at the beginning and then Green Bay running it up on them midway through that game. I felt like, okay, here we go. This is the part where Jordan Love turns into Jordan Love superstar. And I still find myself waiting. And it's weird. And this could end up getting clipped next week. I don't fear him as much as his resume says I should.
Interesting. Interesting.
Everything that's on paper about Jordan Love says, hey, man, this guy has got elite talent.
The back half of 2023, when he threw 18 touchdowns and had one interception over the last eight games. And then in that playoff against Dallas, he's 16 of 21 for 272, three touchdowns and no picks. I mean, you're like, oh my God, they did it again. These bastards, they did it again.
They found another one of these guys that's going to be here for 15 years and make your life a living hell.
And he's already there. 18 touchdowns, one pick. What the hell happened? You know? And then it hasn't risen. It hasn't stayed that good. It couldn't possibly. If he hadn't gotten the concussion and finished that game and the Packers win, which it looked like they could have, right? And it's their division.
Everything's upside down.
Everything's upside down, and we're not having this conversation. He got knocked the hell out. That man got concussed, as you saw right there, then and there. And that is what I fear that is what has derailed it and not the quality going back and forth.
Well, what makes me uncomfortable about this game is what you said, like the way that he played, the way that he was able to manipulate the Bears' defense to get the matchups that he wanted, and then there was execution in after getting those matchups that you want, which is high-level quarterback stuff. He is clearly capable of all of those things. And I keep looking at some of the analysis, like the non-emotional data, and seeing some of the things like, oh, you know, the Packers have a 54% chance of winning the game, which I go, wow, that is interesting, considering that they don't have the second-best pass rusher in the game. The guy that's supposed to pick up the slack for him hasn't had a sack in forever. Their quarterback has been in the concussion protocol. Their running back has water on his knee. Now, I thought LaFleur made a brilliant move. I was 100% with him on sitting guys. It didn't make any sense to expose any of those guys where there's nothing to gain.
Yeah.
Like, it was one of the only things where there's nothing to gain other than playing time and reps, and you couldn't even use it as like a Malik Willis game because he got hurt in the game that they played against the Bears because of Montez Sweat.
So you used a, you had a Clayton Tune game, and then you went to Desmond Ridder, which deservedly got 2.5 minutes this morning on the press conference. I thought that was a great use of the first couple minutes. Didn't you, Tanny?
How dare you? Yeah,
much to the chagrin of Pro Football Hall of Fame Writers Association impresario Alex Kuhn, did not think he was worthy of those questions.
Lawrence, here's what scares me
Desmond
about...
Desmond Ridder.
Ridder.
Excuse me, Ridder.
Lawrence, here's what scares me about Jordan Love, okay? He can run, but he usually chooses not to. He loves the blitz. He adores when you blitz because he throws it right behind the blitz or he throws it deep. He doesn't care who he throws it to. He spreads that ball around to whoever the hell happens to be open. He's really good at processing and getting to his third option or his fourth option. There'll be times you're like, I forgot Dontayvion Wicks is on this team.
Yeah.
They still got Bo Melton? What the hell? How many receivers do they have? He doesn't care. I think he's really, really good. And if he's not putting the ball in harm's way in that Cutler-esque, Favre-esque way, then I think you got troubles against Jordan Love.
I also think that it's one of when I say that, I don't necessarily mean it as a pejorative, because some of that stuff that Favre was doing, only he could do.
Oh, yeah.
And I do feel like Jordan Love has got some ability where you're like, yeah. I understand why you tried it.
Oh, no, that's the thing. Like, this Domofsky.
Why you specifically tried it.
Like, in the Domofsky story, like, Holmgren sits down Favre after that third year and he's like, second year, and he's like, all right, we need to get this and this and this out of your game. We need to do that. And Favre's like, but that's just how I play. That's just what I do. And Mike's like, you want to go 9-7? You want to win a playoff game? Okay. You want to go to the Super Bowl? We got to get this stuff out of the game. And he's like, okay. All right, fine, whatever.
But then there's the game when you could have gone to the Super Bowl and
that guy comes back.
You can kick a field goal.
I know that guy comes back. What are you doing, brothers?
That's one of my favorites.
This is the NFC Championship.
It's my favorite sound bite.
It's great.
Brett Favre goes back to pass. He pumps. Now he fires over the middle. Intercepted. I can't believe what I'm seeing right now. It was intercepted by Tracy Porter. Near side to the 40. And John Sullivan runs him down at the 47-yard line. You've got to be kidding me. I can't believe what I just saw. Looking at that play, he should have just held on to it, Paul. He should have. He could have easily gotten 5 or 6 yards if he would have just pulled that thing down and dove forward. But why do you even ponder passing? I mean, you can take a knee and try a 56-yard field goal. This is not Detroit, man. This is the Super Bowl.
I had all the quotes wrong. But boy, the essence is good. That's what happens when your play-by-play guy is also a talk show host.
Uh-huh.
Bad idea, although he's one of the best in the game. But generally, if you don't like opinions on your broadcast.
Oh, man. I mean, seriously. Was it Michael Kay? Right? The category is lead play-by-play for a team that is also a talk show host capable of taking out the driver. You know, there's not many
but
of
Michael
those.
K doesn't do that, though, I don't think.
Does no.
Yeah, he's not particularly critical.
Every once in a while.
When it came to, like, the Yankees defense, he got real
he
critical.
He got all over him about the defense.
But
one
with
point.
That call, what I like about that particular call is I'm going to do my job. I'm going to call the play so everyone knows what happened. I'm going to be calm in this moment for a second. I'm gonna go through all of this, and now that I have given you the call, I've given you the highlight. Now let me give you some context here.
Pete Burch is just
stupid. I'll let my analyst also have a word here quickly before I really take out the driver.
Burch is like, I got a thought. And Paul's like, well, I got a thought too. I have a bigger thought. It's the Super Bowl. This isn't Detroit.
This isn't Detroit.
Poor Detroit.
Speaking of broadcasters. Our next segment, we're going to talk about a couple of them.
Yeah, you had an experience last night, and Tanny has unveiled a salty Kraken that we need to hear from as well.
That's next on The Score.
Happy New Year from the Windy City, downtown Chicago, dressed up in lights. And tonight we got a Big East clash between two schools looking to climb the ladder in the conference. Georgetown coming to town. Set to take on the Blue Demons from DePaul, and we got it for you here on TNT as we present the Big East Conference, Georgetown DePaul from Wintrust Arena here in Chicago. Happy New Year. Welcome courtside here in Chicago. Spiro Adidas, Chris Patola. We'll hear from Andy Katz in just a little bit.
Rock and roll, Spiro Adidas.
It must be time for the Titans and the Saints to play, if I'm hearing Spiro Adidas.
I mean, it was kind of that.
Big East basketball.
There's Lawrence just looking to sit down and watch Alma Mater, where he teaches, wants to see him play some ball.
My first sports love, DePaul University.
There it is. And you just want to sit down, watch a game, and here's Spiro.
Inbound to Benson. He's going to dribble it out. And the DePaul Blue Demons going to get their 10th win of the season as they outlast Georgetown here in Chicago, 56-50.
Now, he could at least get the score right. 56-50. There's no way that was the score of that game last night.
Wait,
what?
That's not a lot of points.
Tanny, that was the score
of the first half or something?
And the reason why it was the score last night is because Georgetown made one field goal in the second half. One.
That's not a lot of field goals.
They made one. They made 12 field goals for the game. They shot 22% from the floor.
So how was your Spiro Adidas basketball experience?
I actually thought Spiro did a nice job.
Okay, good.
Calling
Spiro
the game.
Spiro Adidas saying good night from Chicago.
That'll have legs.
So there, what I do think is interesting, and Tanny, you didn't make mention of it. Spiro, it was the 6th of January, and he's out here wishing you a happy new year. He cannot let go of the holiday season. I'm glad that he spent the holiday season here in Chicago.
It's not the holiday season anymore.
He said it. He said Happy New Year.
Happy New Year from the Windy City.
Always wonderful to see, especially this time of year. It's the holiday season.
It's holiday season.
You ruined this song for me. Absolutely ruined it. Several friends in the play-by-play community are now hip to my Spiro Adidas besmirching, and they say that I've ruined him for them.
How about this? I was pleasantly surprised because I haven't zoned in on college basketball as much as I'd like to. I went to one DePaul game. I watched them win against Xavier. But TNT's coverage, I look up at halftime, and there's Tim Doyle.
Tim Doyle, studio host for TNT's coverage.
He's doing a really nice job. It's a good panel, too. You know, you got Seth Davis on there, so you got your reportery type guy. Uh-huh. Jamal Mashburn is there, and then Dennis Scott. It was their halftime and postgame was really good.
I like thinking about Dennis Scott as a college hoops player because I loved those Georgia Tech teams, man. That was some real deal stuff.
I was happy for Tim, and I thought it was a cool thing, and I wasn't overwhelmed. But DePaul with two wins in the Big East before January 10th. That is a win.
Folks, here's the other thing. I know when something finds its way onto our show document that says that the Seattle Kraken play-by-play guy, John Forsland, has had about enough of live reads.
We've got to play it.
I know that we need to hear that as soon as possible. We've waited until 4:52. Tanny says that John Forsland, the hockey play-by-play voice of the Kraken, was salty.
The Kraken with a 3-goal lead, and by scoring the 5 goals tonight, as it's brought in by Shane Wright to the high slot, broken up by Mittelstadt. This means all fans get 32% off Alaska Airlines flights to anywhere in California that Alaska flies. Check out all the destinations you can as the court comes up big by visiting alaskaair.com/getawaygoals. Now I'm done with War and Peace. Now, Lorai from the back of the goal. Let's make that one longer next time. Out to center. Janot now will clear it in. 8:40 left in this third period. The powers that be that control these things have never read something and watched a hockey game at the same time. That's all I've got to say. It's almost good night, folks.
So look, he's right.
Oh,
that is
sound. That's
he
so,
is right. It is a long read.
That's a long read to drop into play-by-play of hockey.
Hockey! Hockey, there's no more difficult sport to do. And that man has...
And if you're looking down at the read, that means you're not looking at the ice.
Right. And he's reading Tolstoy.
Yet, however, on the other hand,
you need the money.
You really do. I could say, John, I know you're a legend in the business. You coined the phrase, that's hockey, baby, apparently. So he's a legend in the industry. But
somebody's been reading Wikipedia.
Per Alaska Airlines, per the client, they don't like it when you say stuff like that.
Yeah.
Let's make that one longer next time.
See me, John.
See me. Not good.
Not good. Good.
Not good.
Not good, John.
That was a vicious bus toss to whoever wrote those,
yes,
by the way, too.
And again, he's 100% right.
Yeah, but you don't say it out loud. You don't. Except when you do say it out loud, you find your way onto a 50,000-watt blowtorch in Chicago.
And then somehow blame Baby T for it.
Baby T, you get that copy fixed, okay?
Man, it's going to be awesome when he's your partner.
You don't want to upset John Forslund.
He'll remember all this stuff when he's your partner.
He coined the term, that's hockey, baby.
According to Wikipedia.
Apparently.
Which is crazy, because that's a great phrase.
That's hockey, baby!
Now I'm done with War and Peace. Now, Laura from the back of the goal. Let's make that one longer next time. Out to center. Janot now will clear it in. 8:40 left in this third period. The powers that be that control these things have never read something and watched a hockey game at the same time. That's all I've got to say. It's almost good night, folks.
That's all he's got to say. He's
got some Harry Doyle going on there.
Ah, to hell with it.
And yeah, when you really can fly from Seattle to California, you got to do it.
And you got to use Alaska Airlines. I mean, that's a lot. You're asking a lot of the listener to understand that Alaska Airlines flies from Seattle to California and to write down the web page.
I got to imagine, though, that they're probably one of their top sponsors. So
they got a 60-second read during play-by-play, of course. They ought to be. It's probably the Alaska Airlines arena they're playing in.
Yeah, it's a
full website. .com.
.com. Chris Emma has been at House Hall all day. He's got a Bears hit. One word next on the score.